This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
You're listening to the Steve Carino Show on placetobenation.com. Now, here's your host, the king of old school, Steve Carino.
Hearty hello and welcome to another edition of the Steve Carino Show. I am your host, Lenny the Drug Dealer, played by Steve Carino in the award-winning No Clowning Around, directed by my buddy, Rob Dementia. If you didn't know by now, you should, but the Steve Carino Show is brought to you every week free of charge through the Place to Be Nation. But if you want to contribute, head on over to ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Carino and get one of the four new Carino-inspired t-shirts. I always say Carino-inspired because, you know, there's a Steve Carino shirt, a Mr. Wrestling 3 shirt, a Premier Wrestling Federation shirt, and an American Tiger shirt up at the moment, and we got more on the way. You like to order from High Spots? Of course you do, dudes. They have everything from wrestling rings to wrestling gear, belts to DVDs, and DVDs hosted by me, woo, Steve Carino. Click on the High Spots link on worldofcarino.com. You buy that way, then they kick a little cheese back to this guy. Hey, on tonight's show, we have two guests again. Two. What other podcast gives you two guests? Cabana's going to give you one. Austin's going to give you one. Jericho's going to give you one. Steve Carino's going to give you two. We got Brad Cook from OOTP Baseball. He'll join us, and also former ECW referee Mike Keener will be in the hizzy. Whew! Man, I am excited for tonight's show. I got my main man, the producer with the most, Dan McGinn, in the house today. Now, Dan, before I get to it, I gotta start this out with a little bit of complaining. I gotta complain about Memorial Day.
Oh?
Oh, yes. Now, I love Memorial Day. Memorial Day is basically a great holiday where you can actually, like, just take a time to be with family and cook out and all that, you know, capitalistic jazz. But it's also a time of reflection of the people that died for this country for the last 300 years. And not only died for this country, but sometimes they died for it for reasons beyond our ideals, you know, whether it be Vietnam or Iraq or, you know, eventually getting into World War II. And we could spend days talking about, you know, how the wars went. But the actual soldiers that will go in and they die for the belief of the freedom that we have in the United States of America, and it's their day. And I swear that people screw it up. And I say this because my wife works for the Marines, and I have a good buddy that not only wrestles for me for the PWF, but he's a staff sergeant at Camp Geiger on Camp Lejeune. And people go up to them and be like, well, thank you for your service. And I can understand them, but they get like, well, wait, you're missing the point of Memorial Day. Memorial Day is to memorialize the people that have passed away, not the people that are serving right now. That's Veterans Day, and, you know, and it's just people are losing it, man. And I got to complain about the traffic in Emerald Isle, North Carolina. And granted, when we got a house down here, we knew it that, you know, during the winter, there's going to be 1,300 people in this whole town. During the summer, there's going to be 30,000 people a week. Oh, but it makes traffic unbearable. It makes traffic like it was New York City. You know, and if the speed limit's 45, people drive 27. Like, why not just dump the speed limit down to 27? Oh, it was ridiculous. And I got to tell you a quick story because it's kind of humorous, but it's kind of sad at the same point. My brother-in-law and sister-in-law, who are awesome people, my brother-in-law's name is Dan, and my sister-in-law's name is Casey. And Dan's a huge baseball fan, and it is super cool. I couldn't have picked a better brother-in-law. They come down for the weekend and they spend it with us. And, you know, there's cookouts, there's beer, there's MLB The Show battles. It's 1-1 right now. And, you know, so they leave at 3 o'clock on, you know, Monday afternoon, thinking, okay, well, we'll beat the traffic off the island, and they live in Greenville, North Carolina. So it's about an hour and 40-minute ride. It takes them 2 hours to go 5.7 miles, and that's how long that's how far it is from my house to over the bridge over to the mainland. And it takes them 2 hours. They finally get over the bridge, and they're at the intersection of, like, the big roads in Cape Carteret and Cedar Point. If you've ever been down here, you'll know what I'm talking about. Well, apparently a freaking cop blows through a red light with their lights on, not looking, not doing anything, T-bones a car. The car then hits my brother-in-law's car and a car behind them, or next to him. Holy shitburger. So, like, my poor brother-in-law takes 2 hours to get over the bridge, and then he's got to come back for the day because somebody hits his car. Be like, yeah, I got it together. Now, you know what? I got to admit, there's something bothering me, too. And it's not just Memorial Day. It's Josh Beckett. Josh Beckett. No hits the Phillies. Josh Beckett. We're not talking about Florida Marlins Josh Beckett. We're definitely not talking about Boston Red Sox Josh Beckett. We're talking about Los Angeles Dodgers 2014 Josh Beckett. No hits the Philadelphia Phillies on Sunday. Oh. Now, I have been a baseball fan all my life. And I have seen many games. And I've seen some great stuff at the games. But I've never seen a no-hitter live. I saw the perfect game that Roy Halladay threw, you know, 4 years ago, which was actually on my birthday. He threw it for me. I don't believe that's true. I mean, I do believe that Ryan Sandberg's hit home runs for me. I can see it when he looks in the camera. But I've never seen anything live like that. So, you know, it's cool. I get into my van. I'm driving home. It's a 48-minute ride home. And Josh Beckett's thrown a no-hitter against my Phillies in Philadelphia. Oh, so I'm like, no way this will happen. Somebody will break it up. I'm texting people at every red light. No hitter, no hitter, no hitter, trying to do the stupid jinx. Seventh inning, eighth inning, ninth inning. I'm now 10 minutes away from home, and I am furious. Hit the goddamn ball, Philadelphia Phillies. But they didn't. Josh Beckett records a no-hitter in Citizens Bank Park against the Phillies. Well, luckily, I'm a couple weeks away from attending a Phillies game on Father's Day of all time, which is great. And I think it's going to be the time. It's got to be the time, Dan. It's got to be this time where me and Rhino meet. And I mean, we got tons of shit to talk about. And I don't think it's just going to be a handshake. I definitely see a man hug. Hey, man, thanks for 29 birthday cards. And we're going to sit down, and he's going to help me with my out-of-the-park baseball team. And I'm definitely going to give him a little bit of pointers about how to at least get one hit out of this Philadelphia Phillies team. Ryan Howard, you couldn't get a hit. Jimmy Rollins, you couldn't get a hit. Marlon Byrd, you couldn't get a hit. Chase Utley, you get a pass. But, I mean, ridiculous. Absolutely freaking ridiculous. Now, Dan, cheer me up, buddy. You got to tell me some good news. You got anything that you did this week that's going to cheer me up?
Well, Steve, in addition to spending some time with the family and getting a little bit of rest and relaxation, had a nice long weekend, I actually got a chance. I did my homework. Last week I did my homework. I watched War of the Worlds. We had a nice little chat about it. We were actually able to really go back and forth on the show. And so I decided, you know what, let's keep this train rolling. So I ended up doing what you told me to do a few weekends back, and I actually sat down and watched the movie Frozen.
Get out. Tell me it's not the greatest movie you've ever seen in your entire life.
Oh, man, it was spectacular. It had everything you'd really wanted. It almost played out like a good wrestling show. I mean, you had like you had the two sisters, and you're like, oh, I really like them, but ooh, there's something mysterious about the one of them, and then they get separated, and you're like, man, I just want to see them get back together, and you have kind of like this weird, like, I'm not really sure, is she a tweener, is she a heel, is she a face, I'm not really sure, I feel kind of bad, but now everything's
a little sympathetic, yeah, oh yeah. Right.
And then you had the guys, and you're like, oh, these guys both seem really nice. I think they, you know, eventually, I know one might find true love. I'm not sure about the other one because, you know, the whole Frozen thing. But, you know, and then you have, like, this major swerve, you know, a huge heel turn halfway through. And you know, you're just like, oh, my God. But then surrounding all that is wonderful music. You have a hilarious little snowman character who just, you know, you can't help but watch this thing. It's just hilarious. It's great.
Absolutely. And it's one of those now I say Blu-ray, because we had gotten the Blu-ray, like, basically the day after that it came out, and we sat on it. You know, it was trying to find the right time. My wife worked second shift, and, you know, my business outside of wrestling, I'm pretty much home by 3 o'clock, and, you know, I have different employees that I got to make sure do their thing. But I pick up the baby from the babysitter, and, you know, it's relaxation time. But, you know, so it's trying to find that day where my wife and I can sit and watch together with the baby. And we did. And, man, we were hooked from the beginning. Oh, man, do you want to build a snowman? Oh, I mean, like, that song, like, got me. Like, I was YouTubing it in my car. I'd be like, do you want to build a snowman? And, like, it was so sad. Like, this poor little girl can't, you know, play with her sister. And, like, her sister can't tell her why, which I never could understand why she couldn't tell her why.
Right.
And, you know, then the sister secret's out. And, you know, I've heard, like, you know, the big song that everybody's singing, and like, so, like, I'm like, oh, here it comes in the middle of the movie. I'm like, oh, I thought, like, that song would be, like, at the end. And, but, you know, and she's got to go out on her own. And then there's Olaf, the little snowman, who is probably the cutest thing ever. And I'm a huge Beauty and the Beast fan, like, right. You know, especially with, you know, my wife is very young and pretty, and I'm older and beat the shit. And, you know, so Beauty and the Beast really relates to me. Whereas now, you know, Frozen is taken over in that old style, like, cartoon. And, like, Olaf was such a great character. And then the end, and I'm sorry if we're spoiling for you, for people that are out there listening to the Steve Carino show and thinking, like, oh, Dan and Steve are spoiling it. But if you haven't seen it right now, you're in big trouble. You should have seen it.
Well, Steve, mm-hmm. As I was saying, you're probably not spoiling it for anybody, because as we documented before, I was probably the last person on Earth to watch Frozen. So.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we definitely were late to the party. But the fact that, you know, when they were talking about true love's kiss is going to get the spell and everything like that, and it actually was the true love kiss was the sisters. And, like, I went, no way, that was awesome. And then the heel turn at the near the end was just so, like, well played. And, man, my hat's off to Disney. I can't wait. When on October 25th, ROH is running a show in Lakeland, Florida, and, you know, I'm going to take my family, and we're going to go down, and we have a buddy that works for Disney World. His name is Andre Brown, who, if you ever get to go to Disney World and see some of the spectacular shows that Andre Brown is in, and he's a huge wrestling fan, so wear a wrestling shirt when you go there. He'll pick you out. And, man, like, I can't wait to get, like, an Olaf doll. And, you know, I'm going to say it's for my six-month-old, but what a great show. No, man, I mean, what a great movie. Absolutely.
I'm sure my mom will get one of those dolls at one point as well. She's a big fan. And I joked with my family. I said, maybe you should have separated myself and my brother Chris more. And we might have turned out to be something special as well. But no, I'm just kidding. Chris is a good guy. And we're still pretty close even to this day. So, but no, the movie was great. I'm glad I did it. I'm sure there'll be other times where you recommend things to me. And I might put it off for a few weeks. But then I'll come through, and eventually I'll come through. And I was happy with that. I don't know if you noticed this, you know, I put on Shrek for the first time. And,
wait, what?
Yeah.
Wait, you have never seen Shrek before?
No, I had seen it. It just had been a long, long time. And I had to write about it. I had to put it on my Facebook that if you don't care for Shrek movies, then you're just a bad person. I kind of stole that from you, but I think it's absolutely true.
Oh, absolutely. You know what? My favorite part of, you know, besides the story, but the music is great in Trek. and Rufus Wainwright's version of Hallelujah in Shrek is absolutely spectacular. Spectacular. And I'm a big fan of, you know, I'm a fan of Leonard Cohen, who originally did Hallelujah. And, you know, there's so many people that have done it before or after him. And, man, that I think Rufus Wainwright's version is absolutely my favorite, man. But Shrek is a great movie. That's the things, you know, when Shrek originally came out, and I want to say it was 99, my son Colby, don't be confused with American Tiger, it was about 3 years old, so he was the perfect age for it. And now, you know, with a 6 month old, I'm thinking, you know, he already likes Mickey Mouse Clubhouse and he loved Frozen. You know, when do I pull out the VHS and put in Shrek? I mean, it won't be. I'm sure it's on Netflix.
Yeah, it was a fun filled, kid friendly movie viewing. I put Breaking Bad on hold just so I could watch some cartoons, and I think I enjoyed that decision a lot more.
I couldn't get into Breaking Bad. Are you enjoying it?
You know, last week I alluded to the fact that I was in season three. I'm still in season three, but I'm still waiting for this to be this melt my face good type of show. Like, everybody like gushes over this thing.
Yeah,
I'm three seasons in. Like, you would have thought, like, if I was talking about 24, like, it probably would have been like three or four episodes and I'm like hooked. But this thing is now taking me three seasons just to get into. And again, I maybe I'm just cynical, or maybe I'm just not getting it. I enjoy the show, but it's certainly not like, oh my gosh, this is definitely in my top three. I don't even care.
My wife and I tried to watch it. We got to five episodes. Like, Matt Hardy had recommended it for us. Because, you know, both me and Matt and me and Jordan and Matt and his wife, Rebby, are fans of The Following. And, you know, we were both fans of Lost. And, you know, he's like, oh, you got to watch Breaking Bad. The writing is spectacular and everything. And we just couldn't get into it. And I feel awful right now in thinking, you know, now we're the old married couple where we're looking at like, oh, shit, like, The Following is done for the season, and Dancing with the Stars is done, and Modern Family's done, and The Goldbergs are done. Like, what do we watch? And like, we even considered rewatching Lost, which
wow.
To me was the greatest show ever. Were you a Lost fan?
I was late to the Lost party. I flew through it once I started watching it. I did watch it to the very end. I wasn't like, you know, it ended and then like 6 months later I watched it. Like, I was definitely in on Lost, but it took me probably to the start of season three to actually get going with it. But once I got going, I really just flew through those. It didn't stand a chance, and neither did my social life, because I was probably putting back like six or so episodes a day when I was trying to catch up.
Oh, absolutely. I'll tell you how I became a fan of Lost. Amazing Kong, who was Karma in WWE, mm-hmm. We were in Japan, and she gave me the first season of Lost. We had 4 days off in a row during a Japan tour, and she gives me these she gives me these DVDs, and she's like, you gotta watch the show Lost. Now, they had already started season two, and she goes, give it four episodes. If you're not into it in four episodes, just turn it off. I said, got ya. After the first episode, I ran to the convenience store, which was called Lawson, and I got as much food as I could for the next couple days. I came back and literally watched the whole first season. Like, I would fall asleep for 3 or 4 hours, pop up, throw the DVD back in, and watch it. And I became such a fan. And, I mean, I even had a Lost party in 2010 for the final episode. And, you know, when I started dating my wife, and, you know, I immediately started with you should see some Lost. And she got into it pretty quick and stuff like that. Now, I got to ask you, Dan, how old are you?
I am 33.
Okay, good. So this is perfect. My wife is 25, you know, and I just turned 41. If you do the math, it's four presidents. I get it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, So, what did you think of the last episode.
I will preface this by saying that I was never the type when watching Lost where I needed to know all the answers. I was never that type. I was just watching it for the show, like the twists and the sci-fi and the, you know, I didn't need to know everything. I just, you know, like everybody else, wanted to see how it ended. So for me, I actually found myself enjoying it, and then because I was looking at it as, from an open mind, and I don't care that if they didn't explain this from season two, how could they not do that? So for me, and people are probably rolling their eyes, they're probably gonna be like, how could you possibly enjoy that, blah blah blah, you know, they didn't do this, and how, what, where were they, I don't know, were they dead, were they not dead? I didn't need to know that. When I watched it, I was like, okay, that is a fitting end, and I'm cool with it, and I'm ready to watch something else, but I'm glad I was part of this moment.
To me, it was an end. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there was no going back, and I believed it was like life. You really don't get all the answers at the end of the day.
Right.
You know, there's always those questions. To me, it was spectacular. I mean, spectacular to the point where I watched it on Friday night after the Bruce City Wrestling Show in Milwaukee. And it's one of those things, like, I don't cry much. I don't know if it's just not in me, or, you know, I'm a pseudo macho dude or what, but the last episode of Lost and Field of Dreams are the two things that will get me teared up. And I know how Lost ends. But, man, when the whole, like, maybe second episode or third episode to the end, and you know it's coming, and, you know, then they're going to the party, and guys, when they start realizing that they know each other from the parallel universe to now, it was – you know, just the tears are rolling down my face. My wife is looking at me like, wait a second. Is this the person that, that I watched shove his thumb up somebody's butt in a ring? You know, like, who is this person? Oh, when Saeed and Shannon, like, realize that they're together. Oh, fuck, man. Brilliant, brilliant. And it was an end. And I loved how, you know, Matthew Fox, who was Jack, was the baby face the whole time, and there's little things in there, and I thought Jacob was such a sympathetic character, and the Man in Black was a heel, but he was a sympathetic character, and you could understand, and the evolution of all the characters, man, I'm going to rewatch it. Holy shit. But I literally, every time I watch the last episode, I ball up a little, and oh, and Sawyer and Juliet, like, oh, and he says Blondie, and oh, man, I'm about to freaking cry right now.
Well, it's really amazing with shows, like, you know, it's the character development, the writing, there's a lot of things that kind of hook you in. I mean, I was watching, of all shows, Burn Notice, and I was kind of late to that party, too, and I was watching Burn Notice, and then when it finally ended, like, I was just like, oh, man. And, like, a lot of stuff got tied into, like, episode one, scene one. And I was just like, you know, I was by myself and I got chills. And then next thing I know, I feel this tightness in my throat. And I'm like, this is still Burn Notice, right? Like, I didn't just watch, like, a Shakespearean tragedy or anything. But it's just funny how your emotions just get so tied up in knots sometimes when you invest yourself in the stories and the characters.
Oh, yeah, it becomes part of your life. And, like, when it ends, it's like a chapter in your life is over. And, oh, man, it's crazy. Hey, man, before we go to break, I gotta tell people something. This weekend, I came to a realization. Now, I'm very fortunate in my wrestling career over the last 20 years to do a lot of different things. You know, 79 tours of Japan, the ECW and NWA World titles. You know, I've wrestled everywhere, and I've wrestled everybody. And for the last few months, I've been a full-time commentator for Ring of Honor, and it's really saved my body, and, you know, now I'm 41 years old, and I appreciate it so much. But now, then, the other two weekends of a month, I have to be Steve Carino the Wrestler. And I don't know why, because, you know, on Ring of Honor television, I'm basically myself. I throw little cracks in here. I do my thing. You know, I'll cheer for Cedric Alexander, but I'll also give you a heel perspective. So it's very hard, but I get cheered. And Now it seems like every independent promotion that uses me as a babyface, and I don't mind. I'm excited because, you know, my wife hates when I'm a heel. She's like, oh, my God, if they just saw you wipe the baby's butt, they would realize that you're such a nice guy. Thanks, Belle. But Saturday night, I'm in Luxembourg, Wisconsin, which is near Green Bay. It's a couple farms away. It's just farmland. I couldn't believe that I even had cell service there. And I'm a heel against Nick Colucci, who's a great kid. Great kid. I always liked him. So I get into the ring, and I realize, like, when I'm a heel, I start to look out at the crowd before I go out there, before I even, like, discuss what I'm going to do in my match. I look out, and I look at the crowd, and I see, okay, there's these four nerds over there wearing referee shirts. Oh, they want to be picked on. And I see this, and I see a woman in her 60s in a hot pink shirt, and I'm thinking, oh, she's going to be easy. And I see one black person, and I thought, huh, peculiar. Like, of the 150 people that are there, there's really only one black person. And I'm thinking, huh, I'm on to something here. I'm definitely on something. So I get into the ring. I do my whole heel spiel, which was pretty awesome. You know, the four guys in the referee outfits thought they knew some wrestling terms, so I gave them a little lesson. And I'm not that type of guy that gets upset if a guy says, oh, cheap heat. No, I usually give them the definition, then I make them feel dumb. You know, I told the lady in the hot pink shirt to go make me a sandwich. Very chauvinistic. Funny, but chauvinistic. And then I noticed that this one black person is in the back row. And in a direct line, I see Sean Priest, who is an independent wrestler from Milwaukee, who's also black. Next to him is last week's guest, Frankie the Thumper DeFalco. And I'm thinking, there is a way that I can really make this town seem very racist. I'm like, okay, so not I'm not thinking two moves ahead, you know, what I'm going to do with Nick Colucci. I'm thinking, how do I parlay this into this great line that I have? So finally, somebody says something about, I guess he said I was fat or something like that. Well, apparently this dude's got 20/20 vision. Spoiler alert. If you say I'm fat, you're just stating the obvious. You're like saying that the sky is blue and no one gives a shit, man. I'm not trying to go out there and tell you I look like the Ultimate Warrior Lex Luger. So I look and I say, you know, blah, blah, blah. There's no convenience store in this town. They're like, ah, we don't need one. I go, well, what is that guy going to rob? And I point to the back of the building. All of a sudden you get a, ooh, right? But I'm literally pointing straight where you can think I'm either talking about the black person in the back row or Sean Priest, the black wrestler. At this point, Frankie the Thumper DeFalco jumps up and he starts like, oh my God, like it's a Jerry Springer show. And I go, where are you going, big man? I go, you know, you running away? And I go, wait a second. I go, did you people think I meant the black guy? And they all went, oh, I go, that makes you all racist. But I also realized that my heel matches at 41 years old and 20 years in the wrestling business have become a roast between myself and the fans, with wrestling being kind of like a backdrop for the whole thing. I've become the Jeffrey Ross of professional wrestling. Sad, isn't it? Are you sad about that, Dan?
I'm pretty sad.
Will you see anybody at the Payback pay-per-view this weekend doing that?
No, probably not.
Right? Triple H, call me, bro. I have you throw a microphone on me, and I just roast the crowd as I'm getting beat up.
Fair.
Yeah.
Genius. Yeah. Absolutely genius. Hey, man, before we go to break, you want to do some predictions for this weekend?
Oh, yeah, for Payback. Will you be able to watch it?
I will. I have one show this weekend in Bluefield, West Virginia on Saturday, and it's a drive, so I'll be home early Sunday morning. And, you know, because John Cena's on the show and he's such an intricate part of Total Divas, my wife is going to watch it with us.
Well, we might need to try to make this go a little fast, because eventually people are going to start to think that we're the Kevin Kelly show, and it goes on for like 2.5 hours. You have to like have a whole meal and then take a nap and then be able to listen to the rest of the show. So, I digress. Let's get you some predictions then. So in our
let's opening, just go with the big matches then.
Oh, so you don't want to talk to Torito and Hornswoggle?
Shit, no. Put Torito up.
All right. Actually, there's not a lot of filler on this, it doesn't look like, unless they add it that day. So we got a lot of titles matches, starting with the Divas. We got Paige defending against Alicia Fox.
I loved Alicia Fox's crazy black woman character, but I definitely see Paige winning.
All right. Both secondary men's titles are on the line. First, the United States Championship, Sheamus defending against Cesaro.
Ooh. Cesaro's hot. Sheamus is in between. I'm going with Sheamus up by DQ.
All right. In the Intercontinental Championship match, it's champion Bad News Barrett taking on Rob Van Dam.
Please tell me you just didn't do that with your thumbs.
Rob Van Dam.
I won't tell you.
Barrett up clean.
All right.
And when people listen to it, please tweet us at Steve Carino Show and tell us your predictions. What do you got? Do you got Barrett? You got Barrett winning? Please tell me you're not an RVD fan.
I'm definitely saying Barrett here. He is so red hot right now. How do you go against him?
Oh, my goodness. The pride of Preston, UK.
Ugh. It hasn't been announced yet, unless it happens during SmackDown. They're teasing a possible tag team title rivalry or match between the Wyatts against the Usos.
Ooh, Usos are hot, and I love it. I love the shirt. I almost want to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Wyatt family, I could see a tag team title change right there. Put the belts on Harper and Rowan. That's going to be my big pick right there.
It could be the 50-50 booking, because the Usos are hanging out with Cena. If Cena wins, then maybe you could see the Usos losing, or vice versa. Usos lose, then maybe you see Cena end up winning.
How about this? If it's not for the titles, I'm going to tell you, if it's a non-title match, a throw-on, it's Wyatt's up, rematch on Raw Monday night.
I could see that. Last man standing match, we already alluded to it, but it's John Cena versus Bray Wyatt.
It's going to be unpopular. I'm going to go with Cena. And the reason why is Cena's finally going to do the bad thing that Wyatt told him he was going to do. And on Raw the next night, they're going to exploit Cena for, like, he really is this bad person. So Cena's going to get his hand raised, but he's going to do it in a heelish fashion, but he's never going to turn heel.
All right. And in our main event, because we do not have a WWE World Heavyweight title defense because of the injury to Daniel Bryan, we have a no-holds-barred six-man elimination tag team match, Evolution, Triple H, Randy Orton, Batista, taking on The Shield.
Ooh, that one's a good one, because there's so many different ways it could go. Okay, I'm going to say that Batista, Triple H, and Orton are going to eliminate. They're going to eliminate. Whatchamacallit? Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins first. It's going to be 3-on-1. Reigns will then eliminate Batista, then eliminate Triple H, but then lose to Randy Orton, who will then put his hat right back in the race for the WWE World Heavyweight title.
Really?
Yes.
Ah. I have a little bit of a different take on it. I think at the end you'll see Reigns, and I think it'll be Triple H last. And I think what will happen here is there'll be some kind of chicanery, some sort of like some cheating going on, and Triple H goes over. But all the internet people will be mad about it for a little bit. But I think it's to set up a future one-on-one encounter between Triple H and Reigns, and then Triple H will do the right thing, put over the new big star, maybe at a bigger event like SummerSlam, and then that's how that feud will officially come to an end. That's kind of where I'm thinking right now, but I definitely think Reigns will be the last one standing on the Shield side.
It's good. I could go either way. I'm pretty excited. I'm excited for this pay-per-view, even though that there's no WWE World Heavyweight title match. I definitely think it's a very, very strong show. And I'm excited for it. I'm very excited for it. You know what else I'm excited for, Dan?
What's that?
For you to tell me where we can find the Steve Carino Show.
Well, Steve, you and everybody else can find the Steve Carino Show in any of the following ways: by visiting placetobenation.com and clicking the Steve Carino Show banner or the PTBN podcast banner on the right-hand side. In addition, just by subscribing to the Place to Be podcast feed on iTunes, you will automatically receive the latest episodes of the Steve Carino Show. You can also visit Stitcher.com and subscribe to the Place to Be podcast, or download the Place to Be Nation podcast app by hitting up placetobe.podbean.com/mobile on your iPhone or iPad devices. Be sure to also follow us on Twitter at Place to Be Nation and at Steve Carino Show, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/placetobenation. Finally, if you have questions for our final segment or suggestions for this program, email at us or email us at Steve Carino Show at placetobenation.com, Steve Carino Show at gmail.com, or tweet us at the aforementioned at Steve Carino Show.
Hey, and don't wait until Tuesday morning. We got a shit ton of tweets this week, but we love them. I think we're going to have a fun Q&A at the end of the show. But when we come back, we're going to talk to Brad Cook from Out of the Park Baseball and former ECW referee and current trainer Mike Keener. You are listening to the Steve Carino Show. I mean, after all the things that we've been through, I mean, after all the things we got into, hey yo, I know what some things that you ain't told me. Hey yo, I did some things, but that's the old me.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
Very excited for the first guest that we have this week, because he basically is responsible for a lot of my frustration over the last 2 years. Now, it sounds crazy, but in November of 2012, I had just moved to North Carolina, and you know, we didn't have a lot of friends down here. It's getting new to everything. Summer had already been done. You know, the people that are here are they're residents. So a fan of mine tweeted me about, you know, there's this game out there called OOTP Baseball. And I thought, you know, let me check this out. Because I grew up playing the old APBA, or you know, you could call ABBA, baseball game with the dice and the cards and everything like that. And I loved it. My father showed it to me when I was 8 years old, and absolutely loved it. But, you know, I was looking for something new. I had already had games for, you know, PS3, actually PS2 at the time, but PS3 now. But this Out of the Park Baseball comes to me, and my wife lets me download it. It was $20 at the time. Off season, you get a little discount. My wife lets me, you know, she says, go ahead, spend it. I know you love baseball. You're stuck in front of the TV all the time. Yada, yada, yada.
I don't think she used yada yada yada. But yeah, so I download this game and immediately I become obsessed because out of the park baseball, you're not just simulating like a game. You're literally the general manager of a team. I mean, you're talking budget and payroll and free agents and players complaining and guys that you're going to have to DFA, which means designate for assignment and release. And, you know, and I am absolutely stinking awful at this game. Awful. Now, I play this game daily. And literally, it's on my laptop. And as I'm talking to you now, I'm looking at my season and I'm 22 and 31 and I'm 20 games out of 500 because the goddamn Washington Nationals are 42 and 11 somehow. But I love it. I'm obsessed with it. And I figured what better way to try and get out of this two-year funk of mediocre baseball, which means I'm a mediocre manager, than to bring the guy that's the head of the public relations for this game. Ladies and gentlemen, on the phone right now, the man that distributes Out of the Park Baseball and a few other games, ladies and gentlemen, Brad Cook. Brad, thanks for joining us on the Steve Carino Show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
Now, I know you do a lot of interviews promoting OOTP, and we're going to get into that. You know, OOTP is not only baseball, but you also do a hockey game and BTS football. Now, you've told me about the hockey game before, and you know, I'm so bad at the baseball game, which you know, I consider myself kind of a baseball expert, and you know, because eventually we become close personal friends with Ryan Sandberg. I mean, it's coming, but
right,
hey, but has anybody ever like interviewed you to discuss why they're so bad at this game?
No, I don't think that's come up before. People have talked about their own experiences managing their teams, certainly their frustrations. No one has said they're consistently bad. I know you and I have talked about it before, and you've told me about some of your frustrations, even running some of those old Phillies teams from the 70s and 80s who were so good, and yet they would stink and you'd get fired. So I don't know. I don't know what the game has an in for you. I don't know why it's like that.
It does. And you know, what's so great about this game, and for everybody that, you know, wants to get this game, and I highly recommend it, you can visit OOTPdevelopments.com. You're going to see the OOTP 15. You're going to see Franchise Hockey Manager. You're going to see IOOTP, which I play on the plane, BTS football, and a whole bunch of other things. Now, the game here is you can be the general manager and manager of a real Major League Baseball team all the way from the 1890s until today. So I've played the 1981 Phillies that, you know, were in the strike year. I usually play the normal Philadelphia Phillies right now. I'm in 2014, and I'm looking at my screen right now. It is it is Friday, May 30th. I am 22 and 31 and 20 games. Now, 20 games out of first place. And I think I'm doing a good job. But, like, I'm dying here, Brad. I'm dying. And I'm the type of guy that I play every at-bat. And you can play this game where you can play every pitch, every at-bat. You can sim every game. You can, you know, you could actually go and sim a week at a time or a year at a time. And what makes this game so frustrating for me is I love it so much. And my father, who plays it religiously, is so freaking good at it. Like, he'll play a season a day because, you know, he's 65 and he's got nothing to do. And, you know, he just plays this game all the time. And it keeps him from, I thought it would keep him from, like, irritating me daily. But he literally wins so many championships and so many managers of the year. This guy can't text, but somehow he can take pictures and text them to me of, hey, I won another championship. Hey, you should tell Brad when he gets on the thing of how great of a player I am. Yeah, Dad, I'm going to waste my whole podcast on telling this guy how great you are and how awful I am. Now, Brad, how many how many different games do you produce right now? Is it just the baseball, hockey, and football?
Yeah, so we've got the baseball game, the OOTP 15 for PC Mac, and then IOTP runs on iPhone, iPod Touch, and iPad. hockey game for PC Mac, and then the football game, NFL game, will be out next year.
Yeah, and I highly recommend them. You go to ootpdevelopments.com. Our guest this week, Brad Cook. Now, Brad, what makes the OOTP franchise different than any other baseball simulated game out there?
Well, I think it's just, you know, the level of immersion. I mean, Marcus, who created the game, he grew up and lives in Germany, and which is kind of a story in itself, a German guy who's into the Red Sox and creates a great baseball game. But
We'll love him then.
Marcus just really pays attention to the sport. I mean, and we've got a great community, a great user base, a lot of people who make all kinds of great suggestions, and Marcus takes a lot of those to heart. There are a lot of little features he puts in the game. You know, things like non-roster invitees in spring training was added to the game this year. There were people thrilled about that. I mean, it's a feature way down on the list, you know, ahead of so many other things like the international leagues and the 3D stadium support and other stuff we did this year. But people love all those little features, and he's really dedicated to putting all that in there and really make you feel like you really are running a team, and you've got all this information at your fingertips, and there's this whole artificial intelligence in the game. I mean, you can draft prospects, and you can struggle to sign them to contracts. They may not even sign with you. They may be out of high school. They may go to college instead, which they'll do in real life. So it really models just so much of what you see happen in real life.
And it shows fans out there that, like, you know, we can be obsessed with baseball and we can all think that we can have our own team. I mean, every archer back does that, even in professional wrestling. We can all run it better than Vince McMahon. But when you get into this game and you look at your team finances and your budget and your attendance, because you're not, you know, for me, I'm 9 games over under 500 right now. I'm still drawing 40,000. Game down 7.2% from last year. And, you know, I got the owner. You get this from the owner. The owner is concerned. You're 500 ball. And just like you said, there's so much information at your hands that sometimes when you get to just the actual gameplay and managing the game, you relax a little bit because you're like, okay, I got the first year player draft coming on June 6th. You know, who am I going to trade? Who am I going to sign? All right, one of these little a-holes going to want $3 million to sign in the 13th round. And, you know, and you get the emails back and forth, and you're getting trades thrown at you. And there's times when I hate to say this, but I take things personally where I got Escobar in a trade, and, you know, I guess the Blue Jays wanted to get rid of him. No, I'm sorry, he was with the Rays, and they wanted to get rid of him. And they gave money and, you know, him for, like, a double-A player. So I got him backing up Jimmy Rollins, and he's only hitting 176, and Rollins is hitting 260. So, like, you know, he's filling in. And I get this message that says, you know, oh, I should be playing in this. And I took that hard. Like, literally, like, I get rid of this. I'm thinking, what kind of job is it? Like, I would probably be an awful human, you know, a general manager. But it's just, it's something to where my wife, you know, I have a beautiful wife, and I'm like, what do you understand? I can sense a message. She's like, oh, so I can go out with beer with Bull. I'm like, no, I'm like, I gotta get a hotel because you gotta get three, and we're going wrong, but, you know, for the message, I just attack tomorrow. Okay, this is the anger cousin, and, you know, so it's not part of my weekend life, but IOTP on the Kansas is how you get smart on the airplane. So I love it. How long have you been off with OOTP franchise?
I've been there since 2011.
And you're a Phillies guy now living in California, and you are a Phillies fan.
Yes, I do. I'm born in Kansas, so I was living in Saturday at the time, and the 1783. I actually followed my shoot to car after old year gaming autograph, which I don't remember. I was 13 years old, and it was kind of fun. My dad found out wearing the best game of games autographs. And if he was the games on IPOs, my shmig, I got shmig titles during the season, which I got, you know, I was like, we're often like the fleet night. We see a problem back to everyone, got pulled over. But I was a little out on that. I remember that he would invite, because they lost the game, you know, they lost the series to the Orioles, and they were in. So, of course, I was a 13-year-old kid chasing into his car, and he's not in the shmig. Looking back, I just thought that she's on me, but, you know, okay. So yeah, I mean, I grew up in your college, but, you know, I'll stay sick with my team. I'll be a fan.
Now, you go, do you play with the curlies, or do you mix it up a little bit?
I tend to mix it up a little bit. You know, honestly, the current Phillies are a little frustrating, as you know. So I like to play the old ones. I like to go back to the 70s. I've played the 93 Phillies a little bit too, which is always interesting because they do really well. I'm actually in the 93 World Series against the Mariners right now.
Wow.
I knocked off the Braves in 5 games in the NLCS, and I won, what was it, like 102 games or something like that. The 93 Phillies always seem to do really well in that game. They got a lot of course, highly rated players. And So I enjoy that. I admit, you know, it's not as much of a challenge to take on a really good team and kind of reproduce what they did, but it's still kind of fun to do. And it is fun to kind of play forward. I mean, you could play forward decades or even centuries. I mean, I've seen people who've played 300 or 400 years into the future in the game. I mean, at which point, you know, I don't know, you're playing on the moon or something, but, yep. But they, you know, and the one of the cool things about the game is, you know, leagues can evolve, so expansion teams show up and teams can move cities, and the NL can add the DH, which I say boo to, but you know, that can happen. So
some rule changes and stuff like that. My dad got up to 2035. I said, hey man, you're not even going to live to 2035. Why are you playing in that? He goes, oh, you don't understand. There's a new Columbus team. I'm like, okay, I get it. You know, it's great. We're talking to Brad Cook on the Steve Carino Show from OOTP Developments. The website, OOTPdevelopments.com, where you can get OOTP 15 Franchise Hockey Manager, IOOTP 2014, which I recommend if you're a traveler. You can play it on your iPhone on the plane. And also BTS Football is going to be coming out. You can also go to their Facebook pages, and you let me see here, it's Facebook/OOTP Baseball and also Facebook/Franchise Hockey Manager and on Twitter, and I follow them on Twitter, and I see a lot of guys do, because it's fun watching some of the guys that, you know, are so obsessed with the game just like I am. Their Twitter at OOTP Baseball. I want to thank Brad Cook for joining us, and Brad, I hope to have you on in October again when we're into the playoffs, and by that time, I'll probably be fired and into 2015 managing, you know, the AAA Charlotte Knights. But I'd like to invite you back for, you know, if you can come back, and we'll talk some baseball then too.
Yeah, I would love to come back. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And once again, you can get the game OOTPdevelopments.com. Brad, thank you very much, and we will be back with Mike Keener from ECW. This is the Steve Carino Show.
So you've got the script, yeah? You've all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pav. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com, as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, Giorgio Bellino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription, where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point, here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
We'll be right back.
That was a great interview we had with Brad Cook from OOTP Development. And once again, if you want to be obsessed with a baseball simulated game, OOTPdevelopments.com. You get either the OOTP baseball game, IOOTP, for the iPhone. Great game, man. Freaking obsessed. Right now on the phone, we go from one guy to another. This guy has been a guy that's been with me for 20 years almost. So we basically almost broke in. He's a little older than me. We always remember that around this time. And with the WWE Network going on, you get to see him now a lot. And I always believed that he was so underrated, not only as a referee, but as a backstage helper. And the best way to describe him is, if I'm Vince McMahon at a show, he's Pat Patterson. So I'm the guy that, you know, looks like I'm in charge. This is the guy that's really putting together stuff and creating finishes, and a guy that multiple companies that I've run, he's always my go-to guy to bounce ideas off of. I'm glad to have him, you know. And right now we got on him, former ECW referee, current trainer, guy that's been to China. It's Mike Keener. Mike, how you doing tonight?
I'm good, Steve, and thanks for the intro. I appreciate it a lot. What you said was very humbling, and it's been a long road, and I've enjoyed every minute of it.
It doesn't have to be humbling. You're freaking great, you know it, man. Michael, this year is my 20th anniversary in wrestling, and I want to believe that you are 1 or 2 years ahead of me, right?
I did like 1 year. I think I was doing it for like a year at Sharps before I met you the night you wrestled. I always bring this up. I think it was the night you wrestled the Inferno Kid in a Coal Miner's Club match in Delaware. I think it was the night we met.
That's right, yeah. Maybe I was – I think I was a year in at the time, still not knowing what the hell I was doing. And, it was ECWA back in the old Jim Kettner days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, how did you break into professional wrestling?
With a couple friends of mine, we would go down to the arena, the ECW arena, ironically enough, and we met up with these guys who, it's funny enough, they trained at a school which is right around the corner from where I'm training my guys now in North Philly. And, we did these outlaw shows and things of that nature. But really the way we broke in was we met up with a guy by the name of Bobby Piper. And he brought us down to, we met him at a Dino Santa show up in WWWA. And yeah, he asked me, my friend Matt, and Norm the Barfly, he asked us to come down to Iron Mike Sharps in Brook, New Jersey. And essentially they needed a ref, and they threw the shirt on me and said, get in the ring. And I said, okay. And then and away we went. That's how it started.
Now, did you always want to be a referee?
Yeah, pretty much. I never thought, you know this as well as I do, I never thought I would ever be big enough to be a worker. I mean, that back then, it was, you know, when you started, when I started, we before the days of the 1-2-3 kid really broke through, broke that barrier. So I never thought I would, you know, have the size to be a wrestler. Plus, I never thought I was athletic enough to be a wrestler. But I always wanted, so being a referee was the next logical step. And, you know, I loved it. I always wanted to do something, and that looked like the way to go.
And you've created quite a legacy for yourself as a referee. I mean, even today, you know, being a part of Ring of Honor as a commentator, not a weekend goes by where, you know, Todd Sinclair doesn't talk about, like, guys that, you know, paved the way for him. And, you know, your name's always at the top of the list. Now, you had done a lot of stuff in the Northeast Indies, you know, especially with the NWA with Dennis Carluzzo. And, you know, we were always on shows together and traveling together. Now, how were the Dennis Carluzzo days compared to when you started with ECW back in 1999?
Oh, the Carluzzo days were, God, they were fantastic. I mean, you name it, I worked with them. I had the privilege of doing a 30-minute Broadway with Dan Severn and Tori Funk. You were there when we did all the Eddie Gilbert Memorial shows, which were, you know, off the charts. Some of the names, I think it was maybe it was like 97, 98, when Dennis had his deal with a guy, I guess you would call him a carny, a guy by the name of Dapper Johnny, is when they brought in all the, it's when they had the third-party bookings through Jim Cornette. And, I mean, those weekends, we were working with every WWE name you could think of at the time. You know, he would bring in the Headbangers and Draws and Al Snow and Val Venus. And I mean, we were working in front of, God, I miss these days. We were working in front of 1,000, 1,500 in every high school and every place up and down the New Jersey Turnpike, from Wildwood to Keyport to Keensburg, you name the town in Jersey. We worked it in their high school and just packed the place. They were amazing times. They really were.
And it's very underrated because, you know, back in those days, the internet was kind of, you know, internet for professional wrestling was in its infancy. And, mm-hmm. you know, for a time, it was almost like we were running a little territory. We'd be all over New Jersey. You know, especially those shows in Wildwood were so much fun and crazy. And we were getting okay paydays because you had always heard, like, especially when we were breaking in and, you know, Dennis is cheap and Dennis is, you know, basically a carny and stuff like that. But I don't know about you, but Dennis never did me wrong. I mean, he was abrasive and stuff like that, but he was absolutely, you know, a fun guy to work for.
Oh, he definitely was, and I always tell the story. I went to a local jeweler in my town, and I picked out my wife's engagement ring, and every Monday after two or three Dennis shows, I'd walk in, and I'd make a payment on the ring because he was paying me very well. And like I said, when we were drawing those big houses, he always did me right. In fact, one of the guys I rode with, and you know the name better than anybody, Harley Lewis, he always used to joke with me. He goes, "Damn, Mike, you make more than the boys tonight." You know, they were special times back then.
They definitely were, and just great times. Now, you started with ECW in 1999. You're there until the end of it. Now,
yep.
Coming into ECW, you were basically referee number four. You know, because you would have John Finnegan, Jim Molyneux, and then little Pee Wee whenever Sabu was still with the company. And then you worked your way up. And what was the experience of working with Finnegan and Molyneux in ECW?
It was magical, but it was nerve-wracking at the same time, because, I mean, it wasn't so much with Jim and John, it was more of the boys, you know. I mean, you had to, especially as a newcomer, you know, you had to really be on your toes. You had to make sure you shook everybody's hand. You had to make sure, you know, when you were told to do something, you said, "Yes, sir," and it was almost like when they told you to jump, you said, "How high," you know. But once I was given the opportunities, I mean, I enjoyed them absolutely tremendously. It was great. You know, I worked mostly with Molyneux because John didn't really come on the road with us, so it was mainly me, Jim, and if we were in the I think it was like the Michigan area, A.T. Huck was there. If we were local around here, Billy Saints was there, and then, like you said, the Pee Wee was there, and then slowly some of the other guys got faded out to where it was just me and Jim, and then, you know, on some nights. And then when Richie Loke did the extreme referee gimmick, it would be me, Jim, and Loke. So, yeah, it was fun. It was. I wish it lasted a little bit longer than it did. I wish we had gotten in there, you know, earlier. But the 2 years that I was there, I'll never forget. I mean, they made the second half of my career. Without those 2 years, I wouldn't have accomplished nearly what I did.
Oh, I totally agree on my behalf too. It, you know, ECW was a blessing and a curse. And you walked on eggshells a lot, but you had a lot of fun and you learned. And at the end of the day, you know, the company going down sucked, but you know, it made us what we were.
Absolutely.
Now, one of my favorite things that I got to do in ECW was, you know, people talk about like, oh, you got to win the ECW World Title, but what they don't realize is that, In a double jeopardy match, you had two referees, the main event of a pay-per-view, and, you know, it would always be the joke that, you know, you were my referee, you know, like, and the more I got pushed, the more that, like, you became my referee, and it, like, we had our, not like a power thing, but, like, people knew, like, hey, Carino's with Keener, you know, okay, that match is taken care of. But November to Remember 2000, you ended up being the referee for the final part of that match with me and Justin Credible. And it was such a great moment that when you made the count of three, we both looked at each other like, hey, man, we did it. Like, you know, here's the two kids coming out of, you know, the lowest of the indies and making our way through Carluzzo and ECW, yeah. and the red tape, and here we are together. And man, that to me was the moment. And Yeah, I bought. You know, we've talked about it plenty of times. But what was the moment for you that you fondly remember about ECW?
Well, that moment definitely fits. I mean, like you said, and I remember the same, timeline. But it was also in the back, behind the scenes where, you hugged me and you said, hey, kid, we did it, which was humbling to me, like you said, because, you did all the work. I was just there for the fun part. But, just the whole experience. I mean, even the last days when we were on the road, and from my perspective, it was being on the ring crew and driving that truck up and down the road. And here I am driving to New Orleans and watching the sun go up and the sun come down and doing the pay-per-view in L.A. I mean, it could be a whole book in itself. I mean, I can't pick out any one moment other than that night in Chicago. I mean, that night in Chicago was memorable. If I ever sit down and write the book, and I know if you ever write down the book, that'll be a chapter in and of itself, that I'd love to write.
Oh, no doubt about it. Hey, we're our guest this week of part two, Michael Heener, former ECW referee, current trainer. And Mike, we're going to run low on time, and it doesn't mean a bad thing. That means you just got to come back and we'll get into more of the story, because I really want to get into your post ECW career. But what I really want to spend the final couple minutes talking about is you are now basically the go-to guy at 41 years old. Mm-hmm. You are been a guy 20 plus years in the professional wrestling business. Now young guys come to you not only for advice, but they come to you to train. And recently on our first PWF show in Hubert, North Carolina, you had brought three great guys down, Atu Arkham, Charles Payne, Kyle Payne, and we put the Payne gimmick on them. But the amount of respect not only they show to the sport of professional wrestling and the business and their match, and for guys that haven't been in the sport so long, but the amount of respect they had for you was just so cool to watch. And for guys out there that listen to the Steve Corino show and they want to be trained by a guy that's going to teach them the right way, and not just in the ring, but like how to act outside the ring and how to respect what you're doing and enjoy what you're doing, you can email Mike Heener at mkehner, that's mkehner at AOL.com. He runs classes in Northeast Philly, am I right? Or is it in?
No, that's correct. In Northeast Philly, 152 West Lee High in North Philly. It's called the Local Pro Wrestling Academy. They can find me on Facebook. It's on there. And obviously they can email me, anybody interested in being trained. We run classes every Monday night. They have other trainers there, and other days can be set up that I'll come down and work with you. No doubt about that. It's a great – I love training, guys. It's the best time of, my life in terms of, the second half of my career, trying to give back to a business that's been so good to me.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You can't go wrong with Mike Heener. He's done a lot of stuff. He helped American Tiger be start of his career, and just what he's doing with Atu and Charles and Kyle is amazing. And they're guys that haven't had a lot of matches. They came down to North Carolina a couple weeks ago at the PWF and just did amazing. It's just amazing work, and I was so thrilled with it. You'll be able to watch their matches, ProWrestlingPWF.com. We're going to have the YouTube, free YouTube of the whole show from May 16th. And Mike, once again, mkehner at AOL.com. You can hit him up on Facebook. He doesn't have a Twitter yet, so you're going to have to write him and make sure that he gets on Twitter, because I think Keener would be very, very entertaining on the Twitter machine. Mike, I definitely want to have you back in the next couple of weeks so we can talk about post-ECW. I always want to hear about China. I definitely want to hear about Japan. I mean, we have some great stories there.
Yeah,
I'd love to welcome you back.
I'd come back anytime, Steve. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And that's Mike Heener. And when we come back, it's Twitter love and questions. This is the Steve Corino Show.
Think you like to be the victim? Think you like to be in pain? I think you make yourself the victim almost every single day.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith's blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
And now, time for a little Twitter Q&A with the King of Old School on the Steve Corino Show.
And we're back on the Steve Corino Show, and it's that final segment for one of my favorites. Twitter love, a little Q&A, and some questions this week. And, Dan and I were talking earlier about how there was, like, an abundance of questions, like, at the last day. And always feel free to get your questions in. You can tweet them at us, at Steve Corino Show. You can email it to us two different ways, Steve Corino Show at PlaceToBeNation.com and Steve Corino Show at Gmail. I'm going to start off because we talked about this earlier in the show, and I'm still angry about it. Our boy, GDIBIGILIO4III, says, I'm a Phillies fan, like you are. So what are your thoughts on the Phillies getting no hit by Josh Beckett this past Sunday? Josh fucking Beckett, man. You know, me and my brother-in-law, Dan, were complaining about this today. And, like, he sent me a text, like, Josh fucking Beckett. Like, that's all you need to say, because it's absolutely ridiculous. When I meet Sandberg next month, and, you know, my wife just shot me a look. We're gonna be buddies. And we're going to sit down. We're going to fix this team. I'm going to help him with the Major League team. He's going to help me with my OTP team. And, man, I think, because we're never going to hit the playoffs this year, I'm going to invite Ryan Sandberg down to Emerald Isle with his beautiful wife, and we're going to have a nice weekend together with the wives and baseball and just buddies drinking some Mickey U's, and we're going to forget this no-hitter by Josh Beckett.
Yeah, and that's the thing about no-hitters. They're the big deal of the week that they happen, but then – you know, it'll come up in a trivia question like 3 years from now, and you'll be like, oh, yeah, that happened. But
yeah, we talked about it over Mickey Hughes in October.
Right. But my problem with the Josh Beckett thing came from a totally different side of the spectrum, because Josh Beckett was great in 2007. Like, I am not even going to.
Yeah, I mean, so was I.
He was so dominant in the Reds for the Red Sox in the playoffs that when he started to falter a little bit during his it was like, is this even the same guy? So, I mean, he was a complete. I mean, he was part of that deal that sent all that money and contracts to L.A., and the Red Sox, you know, completely fell, you know, the circled the bowl, as it were, in 2012. And when they won the World Series, the Red Sox fans were kind of like, oh, yeah, we didn't need him anyway, and that sort of thing. So when Josh Beckett, of all people, throws a no-hitter on the day, the same day that the Red Sox lost their 10th straight game in a row, like, you would have thought, like, the world was coming to an end up here.
Oh, can't even imagine. Man, I feel like a Bostonian right now. All right, cheer me up with a good one.
This is from at Steve J. Rogers, JR. He's picking up on our conversation last week about your obsession with Ryan Sandberg.
It's not an obsession.
I know, you'll be good friends, I know. At King Corino, you know you've opened yourself up for fan birthday cards of your own this week. And a YouTube video of Buffett performing Pirate Looks at 40. Your response, sir?
No one likes me that much to send me birthday cards every year for 29 years. But I would respond, because that's the type of guy I am. I just think that Sandberg never received these cards because, you know what, like, you never know. It's like the WWE. Like, they never let me in. You know, maybe the Cubs and Phillies organization just don't want me in because you just never know. I could be a big help, but they want to do it their way. Yeah. Thanks. I won't get a birthday card. I cancel my birthday every year. And it'll, by the time this plays, my birthday already been passed. Mm. It will. This plays on Friday. My birthday is on Thursday, honey.
Yeah. My birthday's in April, but if people want to send me cards now, that's fine too. I'll accept them.
It was my baby's 6-month birthday today. That's a big deal.
That is a big deal.
All right, here's a good one. At Green Gang Greenhouse. It's kind of weird to say. Gang Greenhouse. I get it. At Steve Carino Show, what's your favorite Phillies all-time rotation? 5 starters and 1 closer. Dan, what's your all-time Red Sox rotation? You want to go first, or you want me to pull mine out?
Well, I don't want you to ever pull yours. We're in mixed company sometimes, you know? I mean,
right.
My mom sometimes listens to this show, you know?
Mm.
I can start. I mean, it's not it's not all the time I get a question, so I could start.
Yeah, I want to hear what you got. Now, are you going like a certain year, or are you going to go like of all time?
I'm going with like my personal favorites, you know.
Okay.
I mean, obviously with the Red Sox, I could say, you know, Babe Ruth and Cy Young, you know, I could do that, but these are the 5 pitchers that, you know, were probably the reason why I still continue to follow the team. You know, if I was, you know, putting a rotation together. So at the top, they're kind of interchangeable, but I couldn't have one without the other. I have Pedro Martinez.
Absolutely.
And Curt Schilling. Now, I know
wow.
There's a lot of people out there that are going to roll their eyes about, oh, Curt Schilling, but there's no 2004, there's no 2007, there's no 2013. If you're a Red Sox fan, if Theo Epstein didn't go over Thanksgiving to woo Curt Schilling, like the complete clubhouse nature change with him there, and what he did in that particular season is, I mean, again, a lot of people are throwing up in their mouths right now, but that was a big deal, and he was such a big part of that championship. So Pedro and Schilling at the top. I also have a soft spot, and so does my mom, for Tim Wakefield. He racked up a lot of wins for a guy that was picked up pretty much off the scrap heap. I actually am putting Roger Clemens on this list too. It's weird. He's a very polarizing character here in New England, but I personally might not have been a baseball fan if Roger Clemens wasn't pitching for the Red Sox. Like, he was the guy that I kind of, you know, hitched my wagon to, if you will. You know, I was disappointed and upset when he left, and there's all this steroid stuff, but I can't hate on that front. So he would definitely be part of my starting 5. This is kind of a funny one. Oil Can Boyd would definitely be my 5th starter, because I actually remember a story where my dad took me to a minor league game in Pawtucket because he knew that Oil Can was going to pitch, and he joked that, well, this is the only way you will be able to see Oil Can, because we're not going to Fenway this year because, you know, ticket prices and whatnot. So we actually got to see Oil Can Boyd in a rehab start down in Pawtucket, and I know
he's after the cocaine, or was that an injury?
Who knows? But yeah, he has since admitted that he would be on the mound, you know, after snorting cocaine, but that was beside the point. He was still like one of my favorites as a kid. So he would be my number 5 starter. And then my closer, I know it's kind of a canned answer, but you know, I go with what I'm seeing recently, and that's Koji Uehara. I never seen a guy be so automatic like he was last season. So he would be closer, no doubt. Plus, he's so fun to watch with high fives and everything. Got to go with Koji.
I like it. You know what's funny is, wait until you hear my starting 5, because it'll blow your mind. Okay. Of course, number 1 has got to be lefty Steve Carlton. You know, I grew up, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, and my wife was born in 89, so it really hurts me. And, you know, lefty was what I wanted to be as a major league pitcher. You know, I was just, like you said, I polarized by how he dominated on there. Number 2, Cole Hamels. If there's any going to be anybody close to like a Steve Carlton-ish pitcher, I'm definitely thinking it's Cole Hamels. I have a I love him. He's California cool and he laid back and does a lot of stuff for the community. I'm a big Cole Hamels fan. Mm-hmm. Number three, Curt Schilling.
Ah.
Yes. They wouldn't have made it to the 93 World Series without Curt Schilling. And now, number four, and it's not because he did great, but I love the way that he pitched. Like, his pitching style was, and his big tobacco cheek, just, you know, as a kid, I would be out in my backyard playing wiffle ball, and I would have my big league chew, you know, as much out of my cheek as I could possibly put in there. But Dick Ruthen was a big favorite of mine.
Yep.
And then my number five, even though he was only with the Phillies for, you know, the 2009 season, and I wasn't a fan of him until he was picked up, Pedro Martinez.
Ah.
Now, you know, for me, being a Phillies fan, and I hated Pedro, I hated everything about him, whether it be, you know, I thought he was a troublemaker, you know, then he went to the Mets and all this, and I just absolutely hated him. The Phillies signed him midseason in 2009, and I am seething. Oh, I can't believe they picked up this son of a bitch. I'm watching the press conference with Pedro, and he goes, I am very excited to be a Philly, and, you know, I am very serious in it. You know, this isn't going to be any horse shit. And everybody gives a, and he goes, what? You can't say horse shit? And he starts winking at like, different reporters. He goes, oh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said horse shit. You know, and I said, all right, this guy's cool, you know, and, you know, right from then I became a Pedro fan. And it's something Cliff Compton and I talk about all the time. It's like, once you love Pedro, you never hate him again. And, you know, whether it been Montreal or Boston or New York, like, people still just love him because he's a lovable guy. If you played against him, you hated him. But if he was on your team, you were a fan for life.
Oh, my gosh. And the thing is his stocks. When he joined the Red Sox 97, 98, they were appointment television. It wasn't a question of, oh, you know, we got other plans. We'll put the Sox on in the background. When Pedro started, that was your night. Like, that was your evening. And then when he didn't start, yeah, there was a little bit of a letdown. But you knew he was such a character that he would do things. You know, he would still have a presence even though he wasn't pitching. Like, you know, he would tie himself to a pole and, you know, with duct tape, you know, or wear a Yoda mask, like, or try to psych out the opposing dugout. Like, he was a nut and so fun to watch. And there's just not a lot of guys, if any, like him today.
No, absolutely. He was all personality. Now, my closer, many people would probably think that I would pick Brad Lidge, who, you know, I liked. But, you know, once 2009 happened, and he starts shitting the bed. And then Papelbon, I don't like. He's Papelbon to me. Steve Bedrock Bedrosian with 40 saves in the 80s was cool. But I got to go with the guy that managed me in a show. I got to go with the Wild Thing, Mitch Williams. He was erratic. He was off the wall. He, you know, I think my first 30 anxiety attacks were all due to Mitch Williams in 93 closing everything out. But the guy was exciting. He loves baseball, and he was great. So your five: Schilling, Pedro, Wakefield, Clemens, and Boyd. Mine: Carlton, Hamels, Dick Ruthen, Pedro Martinez, and Curt Schilling. Man, that was a great question, gang. Greenhouse. All right, what do you got now?
All right, I got our old friend, the Inner Report. He's coming back after last week's shenanigans. He writes, what was the idea of Bobby Cruz's long introductions at the beginning of your ROH matches back in 2003?
This was something that I wanted to do something totally different than what everybody else was doing in Ring of Honor. And one night, myself and Guillotine Legrand were up at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I can't remember if we were drinking, but I definitely think we were, and we were watching boxing of all things on ESPN, and a guy had like a whole entourage, and the introduction was ridiculous, and I looked at him, I said, man, that should be it. I go, you're my corner guy. We have young boys, and we do the most ridiculous intro ever with, you know, and I had known Bobby Cruz from shows up in Massachusetts. And he goes, yeah, but we got to make it different every time. And the whole idea was to do it to get people to hate us. And they became popular because we did a lot of good ones. And, you know, probably my favorite one was in New York where I was wrestling CM Punk. And I had a list of drug addicted and alcoholic wrestlers. And then he shot back with his own list that was drugs that he had never taken. And yeah, it's a 20-minute draw, but the opening segment with us doing the introductions was 20 minutes long too. So that was a lot of fun. I really, really enjoyed it. And, you know, my buddy Brian Regal replaced Bobby Cruz when Bobby Cruz became the full-time ROH ring announcer. And it just wasn't the same once, you know, Bobby was part of the company and stuff like that. So we didn't do it much after that. But, you know, Bobby did a great job, and it got him a job in – ROH, you know, to this day. And and Brian Regal did a really fun job too. I really enjoyed that time. Okay, I have a good one here from Fish Approved. At Steve Carino Show, have you had a chance to check out Tim Dunst? He wrestled at the Future of Honor show. The young guy is really good. And this is a great question because in was it December that I did the ROH camp? Yeah. December of last year, I was a instructor at the ROH tryout camps. And basically, my job was to help with the promos and character development with Kevin Kelly. And Tim had walked in, and I had seen Tim on a couple shows before. But, you know, I never really got to check him out. I know he did in Chikara and stuff like that. And he blew me away with his promos because it was so different than what everybody else was doing at the time. And the best way I could describe it is it had a little bit of Roddy Piper, it had a little bit of Dean Ambrose, and it had a lot of Tim Dunst. And he literally could tell a story, whether it be 60 seconds, 90 seconds, 30 seconds, and he could tell a story, and he was making me buy a ticket. You know, and I look at guys when they do promos and stuff like that, and I said, will this guy in this promo make me buy a ticket to see him in the ring? And he's one of those guys. I definitely think he's got a huge future. He's very young. And then, you know, when I got to see him wrestle, you know, I was definitely, definitely impressed. What a great guy. Definite big future, I hope, in ROH. And yeah, they, you know, if I was in charge, that guy'd be on my roster right away. Dan, did you fall asleep?
No, I was.
You're up.
I was so into that answer. Anyway, actually, this was a good question. Front one, and it made the show, but also Tim responded to @FishApproved with a tweet of his own saying thanks for the kind words. So Tim's out there, and you know, Fish Approved definitely caught his attention.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to a new voice with a 2-part question at JF Feeney. Third, J.F. Feeney, third, 3RD. He writes, how was your experience working for At Court Bauer and MLW? That's part one.
Oh, I had a blast. Court Bauer, who's now with Ring of Honor in a an office role, he was like one of the best promoters to work for, not just because like you got along with him, but just honest. Like, that's one thing I can always say about Court. Like, if he told you something, you could take it to the bank and really depend on what he was doing and the vision he had for MLW. There was no, oh, we're going to do this in 2 years and 3 years and we're going to be the next DCW and stuff like that. And he really had a mindset for what he wanted MLW to become. And he also wasn't going to go broke doing it either. You know, he had some people helping him with money and stuff. And when, you know, they weren't seeing an initial return on their investment as quick as they thought it was. I mean, Court had told them, like, it's going to take years. You know, they had backed out, and Court had backed out. Like he's like one promoter. You never hear guys going, oh, that guy owes me tons of money. And that, I had a blast with him because he really gave not just me, but a lot of the locker room that he handpicked, he gave them the opportunities to you know, really explore what their character was, you know. And for me, it was myself, C.W. Anderson, Simon Diamond, and then eventually Barry Windham coming in as the Extreme Horseman and, you know, pushing us as that top heel faction. And, you know, we drew, like, on the no rope barbed wire match that myself and Terry Funk had in June of 2003, outdrew the pay-per-view that ECW did in Fort Lauderdale. And that's just a crazy, crazy thing. It was a $40,000 house. And, you know, he really treated the talent great, and everybody always had fun for him. So if there's one company, people always ask me, like, do you miss ECW? And I don't. If there was one company that could come back and, you know, and once again, me be 30 years old too, is MLW. I really liked it.
Well, his follow-up is very similar. He goes, could you please describe working for John Collins and MECW in 2001 and with Buff?
Oh, man, this was a disaster to begin with. Now, I don't even think I met John Collins on that one show that I wrestled for MECW. And, like, I think I got booked through Todd Gordon, and I've never really been a huge Todd Gordon fan. So, like, you know, I always thought that he was rude to me, and I thought he talked down to a lot of young talent, so I wasn't excited. Now, at the time, I was the NWA champion, and they put me in there with Buff Bagwell. So, you know, I was like, all right, this is cool, you know, and I get to wrestle Buff. You know, I wasn't excited, but I wasn't down on it. He had just gotten released from the WWF for that match he had with Booker T. And other things. So they start putting it together, and Todd Gordon walks up to me and goes, oh, this is what we need. We need 12 minutes. You're going to win, blah, blah, blah. I said, all right, cool, man. I go in to talk to Buff, and he doesn't want to shake my hand or anything. And he's eating a sandwich. He goes, what are we doing? I said, yeah, here's what they told me. You know, you want to talk later? He goes, Yeah. All right. I just want to finish my sandwich. Now, literally, me and Jack Victory go to the other side of the locker room, and he puts down the sandwich and goes out the door. And I said, nah, this ain't good. So Todd Gordon comes back and says, well, Buff doesn't want to put you over. I said, really? He goes, so let's just change the finish and Buff will go over. I go, absolutely not. He goes, well, what do you mean? I go, not going to happen. Now, I've never done this before in my life. But I was so offended that Buff Bagwell wouldn't lose to me that I wouldn't lose back to him. So finally, you know, Jack Victory, always the team player, says, I'll wrestle Buff. And, you know, Steve, you just do a promo. So I walk over to him, and it was just one of those times where now I'm irritated. I said, they switched the match. You don't want to lose. I don't want to lose. I go, let's talk about this promo. He goes, well, there's nothing really to talk about then. I go, what's off limits? He goes, nothing's off limits. I said, all right, man, I got it. So, you know, I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere. I just lambasted him. It is just one dig after another. And then he challenges me, and I said, whoa. I said, hey, man. I said, there are no way that these hands are going to get dirty after the shitter that you had with Booker T on Monday Night Raw. And it got a huge pop. And, like, he was literally, like, honestly offended and hurt that the ECW Arena fans booed him and cheered me when we came out. It, you know. But, like, later on, like a year later, I saw Buff at the first TNA show, and he was nice as anything. And, you know, I heard the big thing this weekend is that he hit a Canadian destroyer. Did you hear that? Did you read that?
I saw someone post about it, yeah.
Man, I think Petey Williams is probably on a suicide watch as we speak. If Buff Bagwell's stealing your move.
Right.
Fuck. All right. This one, JT, the nut. This is a question that made me shake my head a little bit. Where is the new WCW coming from if there is one? The WWE is losing money and fans. Wrestling needs a number two. Well, JT the Nun, I'm going to totally, absolutely, 1,000% disagree with you on every aspect of that. wrestling is different now in 2014 than it was in 1992. There is no number two. Wrestling is primarily a television product, and that's all. It's not about who's drawing the biggest houses for the amount of house shows that they're running. The WWE is all about Raw, SmackDown, WWE Network. TNA is doing their thing on Spike. Ring of Honor is basically Sinclair Championship Wrestling. They are a television product for the television outlets owned by Sinclair Broadcasting. The WWE is not losing money, okay? That's what fans need to realize, is that the propaganda that's out there, that Vince is now not a billionaire, he's now just a 300 millionaire or 600 millionaire or however you can say it. So many zeros, I can't even pronounce it. He didn't lose, he lost the value in the stock, okay? Now, say you have 20 shares of WWE and you bought it for $20 a share. The stock goes down to $15 a share. Okay? Now you've already spent that $400 on the WWE stock. Are you now lost money? No, you haven't, because you haven't sold it yet. Now, if Vince McMahon would have the shares drop and he sold that day, he would have lost $300 million. But he didn't. Stock market fluctuates. People need to realize that. Stop worrying about the WWE is not losing money and they're not losing fans. Fans are always going to go up and down depending. You got to realize that the Attitude Era of the 5.0 ratings, those are done. We can't live in the past. The whole idea is you have to live in the present. You got to remember that the amount of television channels on now and the things to do is as multiply. You know, in 1998, there wasn't Netflix or WWE Network or DVRs and stuff like that. Shit, we were just getting into DVD players and stuff like that. Now people DVR stuff. Now people catch it on the next time, or they're going to catch the feed online. And there's so many different things. Wrestling doesn't need a number two. They just need to be what they are. I think wrestling right now is great. WWE's doing stuff on Raw and SmackDown and the main event live and NXT and everything that they're doing with the network. Well, the Ring of Honor is putting on that alternative. TNA, you know, I don't get it. But, you know, people like it. A million people watch it a week. So who am I not to like it? I love Impractical Jokers on Thursday night. So, you know, that's where my attention is. So JT the Nut, relax, man. Wrestling's different now. Enjoy what's out there. Don't overthink.
All right. Well, and speaking of stock, at Alan Blackstock, see what I did there?
I like it.
He writes, at Steve Carino Show, thoughts of working for PCW last month?
PCW was fun. It stands for Preston City Wrestling in Preston, England. And I got to tell you, because I was telling my wife and my brother-in-law and sister-in-law yesterday that Preston, UK is where Bad News Barrett comes from. So Preston is a nice little city. I had fun walking around it in the morning, but it was a little chilly, so I was wearing my Ring of Honor hoodie. And anytime that somebody saw wrestling, they would say, "Do you know Bad News Barrett? He's from this city." Cool. But at least four people within a 45-minute walk. "Do you know Bad News Barrett? He's from our city." All right, cool. Yeah, but man, Kevin Steen and Michael Elgin had given me the heads up about Preston City Wrestling before I even was there. And man, this show was run so smooth. They had 700 fans packed in this little nightclub, and they were fun, man. It was a lot of fun being in there. I saw Matthew from Botchamania. He was at the show. And yeah, just a real fun time. The promoter, Stephen Flutter, is top notch. Once and again, a guy that told you how it worked, what you were going to get paid, where your hotel was going to be, what time somebody was going to pick you up, and everything came true. You weren't waiting around or wondering what was going to go on. Yeah, 100% professionalism, man. A lot of fun. Got a lot of great young talent there. He, and I can't remember the names offhand, but he had a show full of a lot of names. But it was his local guys that were in the main event. And, you know, I went up to both of them afterwards, and I even said it to the promoter. I said, man, you guys work like you belonged in the main event. And they kind of like looked at me weird. And I said, tendency is sometimes guys will work down because, you know, you have a Vader and a Terry Funk and a Chris Masters and a Rikishi and a Steve Corino and an A.R. Fox and a Petey Williams. And you have all these guys that have international experience. And you're like, oh, well, I'm just going to do my thing and, you know, not try and steal the show. These guys were the main event and wrestled like they were the main event. And the crowd came up for them the most. And I thought that was really cool. But, yeah, fans, check out PCW online. I'm sure they have DVDs and downloads and stuff like that. Really, really good stuff. Oh, it's my turn.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's my turn. And I think it's the last question. It's from Simon Dante. Hey, Steve, have you heard of the Frozen Tangled Little Mermaid conspiracy? And if so, do you buy it? I don't know. I have never heard of it. Huh? Have you ever heard of it? She's shaking her head no.
Oh.
What about you? Dan, have you heard it?
Someone brought this up the day that we watched Tangled after, you know, after dinner. We alluded to in segment one.
Wait, you watched Tangled after Frozen?
Not Tangled, excuse me. I have Tangled on the brain because of this conspiracy. But no, when I watched Frozen over the weekend, and someone said, did you know about this conspiracy? And of course, I have to look stuff like this up when someone asks me these questions. So, the first thing that people point to when it comes to Tangled and Frozen, the relationship there, is at the very beginning of Frozen, and you'll see this, and now everybody's going to try it now, when in that opening musical number where they're opening up the gates and it's the coronation of the, if you blink, you'll miss it, but the characters of Rapunzel and Flynn are actually walking into that gate. You can actually see it. There's lots of screenshots on Google. It's Rapunzel with her haircut, and Flynn is walking alongside her, you know? So that
I don't know. That's so, like, that's like, isn't it like the penis that's out in the clouds of the Lion King? Like, you can almost, like, make it whatever you want.
Well, that's just the tip of the iceberg, Steve, because it's all based on geography. And if Tangled is from Germany and Frozen is in somewhere in Norway, it wouldn't be beyond the characters of Tangled, if this is the same universe, it wouldn't be beyond them to go down to wherever to see the coronation of the new queen. So that's where this thing is coming from. They see the screenshot. They're like, well, why would they be there? Oh, I know, because there's a coronation of the new queen. So there's that. Then it takes it to a whole new level because, and I'll paraphrase this as best I can. If Rapunzel and Flynn are at that party, well, why are they at the party? Well, the reason, or at least from this article that I read, is the theory says that Elsa and Anna's parents from Frozen might have been on their way to Rapunzel's celebration at the end of Tangled, when their ship, obviously, and not to give too much away, but their ship ran into some issues. And and basically, let's say maybe The Little Mermaid, that's because it's a Hans Christian Andersen production, you know, based on that story. Let's say...
Are you listening to this, hon?
Let's say, for instance...
This is wild.
Let's say that Ariel and Flounder, when they're looking through a particular ship during Little Mermaid, let's say that ship happens to be the ship of that ran into some problems, right? And that connects Little Mermaid to Frozen, which is now, as we establish, connected to Tangled. So that is your conspiracy. That
holy
all,
shit! Now that, I'm gonna have to watch Little Mermaid and see, and this is gonna take up our whole Sunday.
Yeah. So geographically speaking, if Rapunzel's parents, or excuse me, if the Frozen's parents were on their way to see Rapunzel's celebration, and they run into issues, and then their boat goes down halfway between Germany and Norway, in between there is Denmark, where we were, I guess, supposedly, based on this theory, that's where Little Mermaid took place. Well, then the Little Mermaid's hanging out, sees a ship, sees some stuff, grabs some stuff, and then that, you know, sets the whole thing in motion. But I don't know. Do you buy this? Are you going to become like a conspiracy? Are you going to become Jesse Ventura now and try to prove this wrong or right?
You know what? I think that's what we're going to do. I think we're going to have to go out and buy Tangled on Blu-ray. And, because we love Blu-ray. And we're going to have to watch all three in a row and do our homework. Yeah. My wife said, sounds good. Well, that's pretty wild. Has Disney confirmed this?
Oh, I don't think so. I think this is all like fans, you know, like, you know, like sometimes like you'll watch a Disney film and it'll be like, hey, that's Lady and the Tramp in the background of that production, or, you know, some other stuff that you'll notice, like, oh, like they're called Easter eggs, and you're like, hey, I didn't realize that the first 100 times I saw it. Wow, you know?
Yeah, that's
wild. I think it's like that gone wild. I think people have way too much time on their hands.
Yeah, I can't wait. Well, we're gonna have to investigate this on a future Steve Carino show episode. Hey, do we have any Twitter love this week?
Just one quick one. At Kayfabe Diaries, right? Steve Carino has more entertainment value than most of the WWE guys. At Steve Carino Show, you're awesome. And then he posted a YouTube video that's entitled, and I'm not lying, it's called Steve Carino is a Dick. And this is by a Louis Benson. Do you
that's a video we did in Chicago for Louis, who was trying to break into comedy at the time, and he was trying to do this little web series where he keeps meeting like pseudo celebrities, and they're all assholes to him. So that was actually the only one he did, but that was a lot of fun. I think we got like 10,000 hits on it, and yeah, he never did another one. But yeah, it was a little fun. You check it out on YouTube, Steve Carino's Dick by Louis Benson. In fact, you know what? I will put that up on worldofcarino.com. So by the time that you get to this, you can run over to worldofcarino.com. I will post Steve Carino's Dick. And I hope you enjoy. Hey, this weekend I am going to be in Bluefield, West Virginia for West Virginia Championship Wrestling. Not only will I be there, but Chavo Guerrero Jr. will be there. Jake Manning. And the Freight Train, man, he owes me $15 still for losing my original ECU hat. He said he didn't throw it in the crowd, but I think he did. They made me feel bad for it. Oh, man, one show this week. So that means I'll have a lot of time this weekend to do some investigating with my main girl, Belle. And, yeah, so, hey, on our last few seconds on the Steve Carino Show, visit us on Twitter, man. My Twitter, at King Carino. But also my other projects. The PWF is at PWF Legacy. You could also visit them on the website, www.prowrestlingpwf.com. Also, you can make sure you get there and you can watch our May 16th show for free. For free. And then my website, worldofcarino.com. Don't forget to go to prowrestlingtees.com/Steve Carino. Order one of the four t-shirts that are out there, Mr. Wrestling 3, you know, Steve Carino, American Tiger, the PWF. There's a lot of stuff. And hey, man, once we get up to that number 25, then we're going to pump out some Steve Carino Show t-shirts and Steve Carino, Kevin Kelly shirt. You heard it right here. Go over to his show at Place to Be Nation. The Kevin Kelly Show, and ask him, when are these t-shirts coming out? The new Gorilla in the Brain shirts? Yep, they're coming. Whew! Man, what else do I need to do? Oh, Mr. Wrestling 3, at Legend of the Mask. Dan?
Well, you can follow me at DMcG4881. If you want to interact with the guy behind the guy on the Steve Carino Show, that would be myself. Also wanted to plug my brother, who is also a big fan of Frozen. He is also a would-be writer. If you want to follow him, at cgmcginn.com is his website. And he told me to read this, and he's holding me at gunpoint here. So he says, follow would-be writer C.G. McGinn in his endeavor to become a published author. His blog is part book review, part discussion of his writing process. Send him some love. You know, you read something that he writes and you like it, drop him a little comment. Let him know that you're out there. It's C.G., as in George, McGinn.com. So check that out as well. And, of course, all the other stuff I usually hype, like PlaceToBeNation.com, Kevin Kelly Show, the voice of the Celtics, Boston Celtics, Sean Grandy, will join Kevin Kelly this week on his podcast.
Awesome. And next week, you people are in for a treat. The enforcer, C.W. Anderson, will join us on the Steve Carino Show. And if you don't think that he is a disgusting human being by the end of that interview, then you are a disgusting human being. He is the anti-John Cena, and he is going to tell a story that will blow your mind. And then there are a few stories that we can't tell. Guys, I want to thank you for joining us once again on episode 6. Is it 6 or 5?
Today was 6.
Today is 6? Man, I'm losing track already. Number 6 of the Steve Carino Show. Hey, we'll be here next week. Don't forget to join us.
Thank you for listening to the Steve Carino Show. Download the new episode every Friday at PlaceToBeNation.com.